4. Hans stood on the brink, with the tips of his knee-high black boots projecting over the edge of the natural bridge. The voices of his friends were distant enough to be indistinct. Fog that had clung to the giant trees all morning was falling like fat drops of rain. At once rank and perfumed, the breath of Kashyyyk's perilous and impenetrable underworld made his head swim. Nearby, a pair of Kroyi birds rode updrafts in an oblique ray of sunlight. With deliberate intent, Han let go of a piece of roshir bark he had been turning about in his hands and watched it fall from sight. That section of the bridge lacked anything in the way of a railing, and nothing stood between him and the abyss. "You'll want to watch that first step, Flyboy," Leia said from behind him. Han gave a start but didn't turn around. "Funny thing is, Ground Zero's always a lot closer than you think." Leia's footsteps drew nearer. "Even if that's true, you might want to consider a sturdy pair of repulsor boots." He aimed a skewed grin over his shoulder. Kashyyyk's humidity had fashioned a mane of Leia's long hair, and updrafts tugged at her flowing skirt and sleeveless blouse. "No need to worry, sweetheart. I'm already down there." Leia came alongside him and glanced warily over the edge. "And I thought the view from our apartment was unnerving." She took gentle hold of Han's arm and eased him back from the edge. "You're making me nervous."
"That's gotta be a first." He forced a smile. "I'm fine."
Leia's brow furrowed. "Are you, Han? I heard about what happened with Mala and Waru." He shook his head in renewed agitation. "I have to put an end to this life-debt business once and for all."
"Just give it time. They'll understand. Remember when I couldn't even go to the fresher without Kabarak or one of the other Nogri insisting on accompanying me?"
"Yeah, and you've still got the Nogri bodyguarding you. Not to take anything away from all they've done for you."
"I know what you're getting at."
Han shook his head. You don't know what I'm getting at. See, you could probably command the Nogri to stay away from you. But Wookiees are different. If you think that Lobaka or Waru are going to let this slide, you'd better think again." Leia crossed her arms and grinned. "Okay, so as soon as we get back to Coruscant, I'll have Cal Omus or someone propose legislation that limits the terms of a Wookiee life debt."
"And risk angering Counselor Trebok? Forget it. I'll deal with this in my own way."
Chilled by Han's scowl, Leia straightened her smile.
"I didn't mean to sound flippant, Han. I understand what you're feeling. Today couldn't have been easy for you."
He averted his gaze. "I wish I understood what I was feeling. I thought the ceremony would help put things to rest, but it's only made matters worse. Maybe if I'd been able to retrieve Chewie's body, and there'd been some kind of funeral."
He allowed his words to trail off, then shook his head angrily.
"What am I talking about? It's more than missing out on some ritual."
Leia waited for him to continue.
"I know I can't change what happened at Cernpadal, but I blame myself for getting us into that fix to begin with."
"You were trying to save lives, Han."
"And a lot of good it did anyone."
"Have you told Anakin that you've made your peace with not being able to save Chewie?"
Leia asked cautiously. Bitterness contorted Han's face.
"That was my biggest mistake, putting him in the pilot's seat."
"Han,
I don't mean that it was Anakin's fault, but I know I wouldn't have made the same decisions he made."
He snorted a bitter laugh. "We'd all be dead. Chewie, Anakin, me. And now this craziness about continuing the life debt."
Han paced away, then whirled to face her. "There's no way I'm going to be responsible for the death of another member of the Honor family, Leia."
"You weren't responsible."
"I was," he snapped. "Who knows what kind of life Chewie would have had if I hadn't dragged him all over the galaxy, running spice and chalk root and whatever else we could smuggle."
Leia frowned.
"Meaning what, Han? That you shouldn't have rescued him from slavery? For all you know, Chewie might have ended up dying in an Imperial labor camp or in some construction accident. You can't allow yourself to think that way. Besides, don't try to tell me that Chewie didn't enjoy gallivanting around with you. and that had nothing to do with a life debt. You heard what Ralra said? Adventure was the reason Chewie left Kashyyyk to begin with. You and he were two of a kind.
Han firmed his lips.
I guess I know that. Still.
He shook his head mournfully. Leia placed her fingers under Han's chin and turned his head. Positioning herself in his gaze, she smiled broadly.
You know what I remember most? The time Chewie strapped me to his chest and carried me across the underside of Urwook Rora, like I was a toddler.
Han snorted.
Consider yourself lucky. One time I had to ride in a Kular slung from Tarkaza.
Leia clamped a hand over her mouth but laughed anyway.
Katara's father, the one with the silver stripe on his back?
That's the one. Han laughed with her, but only for a moment. Then he turned and gazed out over the treetops.
It gets easier for a moment, then I'm right back to remembering.
How long does it take, Leia?
Till you're past it.
She sighed.
I don't know how to answer that without sounding trite. Life is all about change, Han. Look at this place. Luma poles have begun to replace phosphly lanterns. Repulsor lift vehicles are replacing banthas. Things have a strange way of reversing direction when you least expect them to. Enemies become friends. Adversaries become confederates. The very Nogri who tried to kill me became my protectors. Gilad Pelion, who once came here to enslave Wookiees, fought with us at Ithor against the Yuuzhan Vong. Could anyone have predicted that?
Leia extended her hands to massage his shoulders.
Eventually the heartache fades.
Han's muscles bunched under her touch.
That's the problem. The heartache fades.
He sat down, letting his feet dangle over the edge of the bridge. Leia squatted behind him and wrapped her arms around him. They remained unmoving for a long moment.
I'm losing him, Leia, he said despondently. I know he's dead, but I used to be able to feel him alongside me, just outside the edge of my vision. It's like if I turned quickly enough, I'd catch sight of him. I could hear him, too, clear as day, laughing or complaining about something I'd done. I swear I've had conversations with him that were as real as this one. But something's changed. I have to think long and hard to really see him or hear him.
You're getting on with your life, Han, Leia said softly. He laughed shortly.
Getting on with my life? I don't think so. Not till I found some way to make his death count for something.
He saved Anakin, Leia reminded.
That's not what I mean. I want the Yuuzhan Vong to pay for what they did at Cernpadal.
And for all that they're continuing to do.
Leia stiffened.
I can understand that coming from Anakin, Han, because he's young and hasn't figured things out. But please don't make me hear it from you.
He shrugged out of her hold. What makes you think I know any more about life than Anakin knows?
She dropped her hands by her sides and stood up.
That's something I hadn't considered, Han.
Well, maybe you should, he rasped without turning around. Where moments earlier images of the sacrifice had played, 20 captives, now huddled inside an inhibition field, raised and sustained by 2 small blood-red Dovin basils. At the center of the mixed species group stood the Gotal Hakig priest, whom Harar had promised imminent death. The field's hemispherical outline shimmered like waves of rising heat. With Harar, Nom Anor, Raff, Aelan, and her pet observing from the command platform, a youthful Yuuzhan Vong warrior wearing a wine-colored tunic entered the hold, paid obeisance to his elite audience, and approached the field.
An assassin,
Aelan said to Vergere in hushed surprise.
A mere apprentice, Harar amended. Said to show little promise, though the task he is about to execute will escalate him in the eyes of many.
Ripples played across the immaterial surface of the inhibition field as the warrior stepped through its one-way perimeter. Nearby guards raised their amphistaffs in anticipation of a desperate charge, but whether out of fear or curiosity, none of the prisoners made a move against the intruder. Once inside, neither did the warrior move, except to turn slightly in the direction of the priest.
"Observe closely," Harar said to Aelon.
A subtle gesture of Harar's right hand was the assassin's signal to begin. Swinging about, the youth emptied his lungs with a sibilant and protracted exhalation. The effect on the captives was almost immediate. To a being, they fell back in surprise, then in stunned realization, and finally in agony, clutching at their windpipes as if the inhibition field had been drained of breathable air. Smooth faces turned a ghastly shade of cyan. Others lost color entirely or blackened, as if scorched by fire. Limbs and appendages spasmed, and tufts of fur wafted from the hirsute. Sudden blood mottled the flesh, then began to seep in mist from burst capillaries. Some of the prisoners fell to their knees and vomited blood. The more resilient staggered about, lurching into one another, until they fell writhing and gasping to the deck. Only the assassin remained standing, but not for long. Knowing better than to draw breath, he hurried for safety, only to find that the Dovin Basils maintaining the field were denying him egress. He spent a desperate moment moving along the perimeter, as if hoping to discover some gap, some oversight that would permit him to escape. Then the full awareness of his predicament dawned on him. Turning to Harar, he drew himself up to his full height, snapped his closed fists to the opposite shoulders, and inhaled deeply. Blood began to stream from his nose and eyes. Torment warped his features into a macabre mask, but no sounds escaped him. His body trembled from head to foot, then he pitched forward to the deck. All at once the inhibition field began to teem with hundreds of spontaneously generated life forms no larger than phos fleas. In crazed motion, they scuttled over the prostrate bodies and massed along the edges of the field, as keen on finding some way out as the warrior had been. Harar motioned one of his acolytes forward.
"Capture a specimen and bring it here, quickly."
The acolyte bowed and rushed to the field. Reaching a gloved hand through the invisible barrier, he pinched one of the scurrying critters between his thumb and index finger and ran it to the command platform. Even before he had reached the steps, the frenetic activity in the field began to abate, as if the swarm had suddenly expended its energy and was dying. The acolyte delivered his tiny hostage to Harar, who pinched the jittery thing between the three fingers of his right hand and held it up for Aelon's inspection. Faintly opalescent, the creature was a flattened disc from which sprouted three tiny pairs of articulated legs.
"Boathouse," Harar explained. "Both carrier and byproduct of the toxin. Precipitated from the assassin's breath. They grow rapidly in the presence of abundant oxygen, but are extremely short-lived."
"Your weapon against the Jedi," Aelon said knowingly.
"A skilled host can manage up to 4 boathouse exhalations, but in a sealed environment, there is no defense, even for the host. Do you understand?"
"I understand that a host runs the risk of dying with his victims."
"The toxic effect of the exhalation is very brief," Nome Anor added. "A host must be in close proximity to her target."
"Her target," Aelon said.
Harar held her in his gaze.
"We would like to arrange for you to be captured by New Republic forces. Commander Tla, while not entirely enthusiastic, has even agreed to afford them a victory in the process. Once in their custody, you would ask for political asylum."
Aelon looked skeptical.
"Why would they accept me?"
"Because we would convince them that you are a worthy prize," Nome Anor answered.
Harar confirmed it with a nod.
"You would provide them with valuable information, information regarding why we have come to their galaxy and what we have left in our wake. You would also tell them of dissension among our ranks, of disputes that prompted your flight, as well as information of some strategic merit."
Does Commander Kla know of all this? Raff interjected uncertainly.
Most of it, Hara replied.
Then I must protest, Eminence. I fear this will become too costly an enterprise.
I will accept responsibility, Harar said. Let us not have genuine dissension, tactician.
Tactician Raff stood his ground.
Eminence, has not Executor Noma Nor just informed us that a Jedi Knight survived an earlier attempt at poisoning?
Why then, should Botaus prove effective against any one of them, let alone a cadre of Jedi?
He glanced at Aelon.
Notwithstanding the obvious sophistication of your designated delivery system.
Momentary doubt clouded Harar's expression.
You do justice to your station, tactician. Your suggestions?
Raff considered it.
At the very least, your infiltrator should be provided with accessory weapons.
Whatever Executor Noma Nor deems necessary to ensure success.
Should the Botaus prove ineffectual?
Harar looked at Noma Nor,
who motioned in dismissal.
Unnecessary, but easily accomplished. There is a species of amphistaff that can be modified and implanted in the body for just such a purpose.
Satisfied, Harar nodded.
Continue, Executor.
Noam Anor placed himself in Aelon's view.
Unfortunately, I know of no accessories that will guarantee your success with New Republic intelligence. That would depend on you. You would begin by claiming to have information regarding the Coom spores I introduced. You would, however, insist on delivering that information only to the Jedi. But be warned, the Jedi possess a kind of divining ability. They would be quick to discover deception, even in one trained since youth to beguile and mislead. Thus the need for a quick-acting toxin carried by a quick-thinking host.
Harar extended the pinched creature to Aelon.
Quickly, Aelon, take it in your palm and clench your hand around it.
Aelon stared at him.
Should I do so? I am committed.
Harar gazed back at her.
I will not command you to accept this charge, Aelon. The choice is yours.
Aelon looked to Verger.
How would you counsel me?
Verger's oblique eyes clouded over with sadness.
I would counsel you to refuse, mistress, and yet you have long desired to be tested, to be given a mission worthy of your talents. Sadly, I know of no more unswerving path to escalation.
Harar glanced at the priestess's exotic pet.
Take her along if it pleases you, Aelon. She may even prove to be of assistance.
Aelon looked at Verger once more.
You would accompany me? When have I not?
Aelon took the minuscule creature into her hand and closed her long fingers around it. When she relaxed her hand, the thing had been absorbed.
It will migrate to your lungs and there mature, Noam Anor said, smiling.
You will know when the toxin has reached maximum potency. Then you will loose your four breaths against as many Jedi as you can arrange to be gathered in one place.
Aelon looked at Harar.
What then, Eminence?
What's to become of you, you mean?
Harar took hold of her fine hand, examining the palm that had absorbed the carrier.
Noma Nor and I will do all we can to monitor your whereabouts, but I cannot promise you rescue, only exaltation.
Should you succeed, you will either die with the Jedi, or face execution afterwards.
Aelon grinned faintly.
That choice is also mine.
Harar patted her hand.
Look to the world beyond for recompense, Aelon. I envy you your imminent departure.
Cordoned off by Kashyyyk vines and Wookiee security guards, the Millennium Falcon sat on landing platform Thys. Alongside the shuttle, Luke, Jason, Anakin, and Lobaka had flown to Kashyyyk. What remained of a Roshir limb, horizontally pruned close to the trunk, the fire-blackened platform at the edge of Urwook Rora was large enough to accommodate passenger liners, but the Falcon and the sleek shuttle had the stage to themselves.
Not since Chewbacca had piloted the Falcon to Kashyyyk during the Yavethan crisis had the city drawn so many well-wishers, tourists, and curiosity seekers. From Corinthira, Norfolk, the Wartaki Islands, and the distant Thakiana Peninsula they came, most in the hope of catching a glimpse of Luke, Han, or Leia, but many to have a look at the Corellian YT-1300 freighter Chewbacca and Han had made famous. Like a Toril navigating a field of profligate shag ferns, Han edged his way through a throng of vociferous Wookiees, intent on snapping his spine with back-slapping blows or fracturing his ribs with crushing hugs. By the time he stumbled into the cordoned off area surrounding the Falcon, he looked as if he'd gone one too many rounds in a G-Force simulator. Leia, Luke, the kids, and the droids were waiting at the foot of the extended boarding ramp.
"Dad, I thought we weren't leaving until tomorrow," Jaina said as Han approached.
"Change of plans," he muttered. "Did you do a pre-flight?"
"Yeah, but..."
"Then let's get everyone aboard and raise ship."
"Why the rush, Han?" Luke said, purposely stepping into his path.
The cowl of his Jedi cloak was thrown back, and his lightsaber hung from the belt that cinched his black robes.
"Are we running toward something, or away from it?"
Han stopped short. Out of the corner of his eye, he saw Leia wince and turn to one side.
"How's that again?" he asked Luke.
Luke's expression was unreadable. "Pressing concerns on Coruscant?" Han worked his jaw. "Tomorrow, today. What difference does it make? But if you have to know, yeah, pressing concerns. A little matter called the Yuuzhan Vong and the fate of the galaxy."
"Han..."
"Don't," Han interrupted. He bit back whatever he was going to say and began again in a more controlled voice. "Luke, it's just that I've had my fill of sympathy, so let's just drop it."
"If that's what you want, Han."
Han started up the ramp, then stopped and whirled. "You know, I don't know what's worse, everybody's fumbling attempts to make me feel better, or your self-importance. You may think you have me figured out, pal, but you don't. Not by a long shot. Oh, I know you've lost friends and family, and now with Mara being sick and all. But Chewie gave his life for my son, and that makes it different. You can't know about that, Luke."
"I don't pretend to know about that," Luke said calmly. "But as you say, I do know something about grief."
Han held up his hands. "Don't talk to me about the Force. Not now. I told you a long time ago I don't believe in one power controlling everything. And maybe I was right after all."
"After all we've been through?"
"What we've been through," Han said, pointing his forefinger at Luke's face, "had a lot more to do with blaster fire than swordplay, and you know it."
"It was the Force that brought down the Empire."
"And just how does that help me?" Han glanced around at Leia, their three children, Lobaka, C-3PO, and R2-D2, all of whom looked uncomfortable. "I don't have the abilities of a Jedi or the delete functions of a droid. I'm just a normal guy with normal feelings and maybe more than his share of shortcomings. I don't see Chewie, Luke. Not the way you claim to have seen Obi-Wan, Yoda, and your father. I don't have the Force at my back."
"But you do, Han. That's all I'm trying to tell you. Let go of your anger and bitterness, and you will see Chewie."
Han opened his mouth and closed it. He spun on his heels and hurried up the ramp, only to stop and reverse directions again. "I'm not ready to walk this plank," he grated as he passed Luke.
"Han!" Leia shouted.
He turned, but looked through her at Jaina. "Take the Falcon back to Coruscant." Jaina's eyes widened. She swallowed hard and stammered.
"But what about you?"
"I'll find my own way back," he yelled over his shoulder as he marched off. In the command center of Harar's faceted ship, a bioengineered quadruped the size of an Ewok was meandering about the confines of the inhibition field, employing its long snout as a vacuum to rid the area of the carcasses of the carriers birthed by the assassin's toxic exhalation. The dead captives, along with the body of their assassin, had yet to be removed.
Harar and Nom Anor stood at the perimeter of the field, watching the creature at work.
Aelon and Verger had left the compartment.
"Much hinges on the success of this plan," Harar remarked.
"More than you know," Nom Anor agreed. "Ever since Prefect Dagara's failure at Helska, I am not held in the esteem I once was."
"I have faith in you, Executor."
Nom Anor inclined his head in thanks.
"Do you think Aelon will elect to die with a Jedi, or take her chances that the New Republic will spare her life?"
"I suspect she will die with the Jedi."
"And that doesn't trouble you. After all, her domain is very powerful. Her father has the ear of Supreme Overlord Shimra, does he not?"
"He is a high priest," Harar said, then sighed with purpose. "Only Aelon can carry this task to fruition. I will lament her death, but it's often necessary to sacrifice the bait to ensnare the quarry."